This is Profiles in Risk. Hosted by Nick Lamparelli. Every week, we interview those who risk life, limb, fortunes, career, and reputation, and those who work behind the scenes who look to protect and enlighten us about risk. You can find the show notes and other insurance-related content at insnerds.com. That's insnerds.com. Now, on to the show.
Welcome to Profiles in Risk. I am your host, Nick Lamparelli. I am pleased to introduce Cooper Cohen. Cooper is an international underwriter at CNA in Chicago. Cooper, how are you?
I'm doing great, Nick. Thanks so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be on the show.
It's a pleasure to have you. We met online. You actually reached out to Tony and myself to make an introduction for someone that you thought would be interesting in the podcast. And then I scanned through your LinkedIn profile, and February being Insurance Careers Month, I said, why don't you come on the show? You were a bit skeptical at first, but I think you're the perfect candidate to actually come on. And actually, we spend so much time talking about careers. You're at the beginning of yours. So you actually have some experience. So you actually have a lot that you can talk about to audience members that are listening. So let's start right off the bat. What do you do at CNA?
Yeah. So I'm an international underwriter here at CNA. And so I know that you had Chelsea Thorpe on from AIG in the past. And so a lot of what I do is going to be the same, essentially what she does. And so what I do every day at a very basic level is to provide tailored solutions to meet the international insurance needs of US-based clients doing business overseas. And so I'm essentially putting together package policies for small to large companies that include a comprehensive package. So I'm underwriting multiple lines, including property, general liability, auto, work comp, EL, Defense Space Act, ocean cargo, kidnap ransom, and many more. So I get to touch a little bit on everything, and I get to look at a bunch of different industries every day. But primarily, as I mentioned, I'm looking at U.S.-based companies that have risk exposures abroad.
So you're pretty young. How can you possibly know all of the necessary details to underwrite the really wide range of coverages that you're responsible for?
And that's the fun thing, is I don't know it all. And so, so still, as you mentioned, early in my career, still learning every day. I've been through a lot of training in the last year and a half. So I've been at CNA and in the international unit for a year and a half now. Been learning every day, been really tapping into a lot of great resources that I have available here, both on my direct team and beyond that. And so utilizing them, utilizing the resources and tools that we have available to us as underwriters, and really all that has enabled me to, you know, find success in underwriting those dynamic risks overseas.
Yeah. When you were in college, did you expect that you would go into insurance? How did you fall into it?
Yeah, so I went to college to study business. I was blessed to graduate from the University of Notre Dame with a major in finance and a minor in entrepreneurship. And when I was in college, I wasn't 100% sure on what I really wanted to do further down the road. I had a corporate finance internship during my sophomore year, which I thoroughly enjoyed, but was looking for a little more interaction in my day-to-day. And so, you know, when I was thinking about, you know, what industries I could potentially see myself in down the road, you know, Wall Street certainly wasn't calling my name. But after some careful discernment, I pretty much narrowed it down to two industries, one being insurance and one being consulting. I kind of looked at those two industries and thought that they were both broad, granted, you know, opportunity across the board, and I could really kind of make it my own in a way. And so without getting too far into it, after vetting out my options, I accepted an internship position my junior year of college with CNA at their headquarters here in Chicago. And I actually sat with the general liability line of business when I was an intern, and was really grateful to have an awesome mentor who really kind of just marched me throughout the organization, introduced me to a lot of unbelievable individuals across multiple disciplines, and it really showed me all the opportunity that is available, not only within the industry, but within our organization. And so I remember one conversation in particular where I was speaking with someone in our healthcare practice, and I was asking him what it was like to be an insurance professional. And he responded and said, you know, I don't consider myself an insurance professional. I consider myself a healthcare professional working within the realm of insurance. And so thinking back on the summer, just realized that I had the opportunity to meet so many different people doing so many different things, and really just thought about all the opportunity there. And so after my internship, I accepted a full-time position with CNA, again, here in Chicago, in our headquarters, and went through our underwriting trainee program and then became a full-time international underwriter.
Did CNA come to campus? I'm sorry, I didn't catch that. Were they active at Notre Dame recruiting?
So they did come to the career fair when I was in school, but I knew I wanted to be in Chicago. I'm originally from Denver, Colorado, but knew I wanted to spice things up and try something new. And coming from Notre Dame, Chicago was just a hop skip away. So knew I wanted to be in Chicago. So I kind of started my search there, looking at, again, consulting and insurance organizations here in Chicago. And so the opportunity to work in CNA's headquarters really attracted me. And then, that brought me to where I'm at now. So I'm very grateful.
I have a little bit of a beef with Notre Dame.
Let's hear it.
The hockey team knocked out my alma mater, UMass Lowell, to get to the Frozen Four last year. So I have a little bit of a beef.
It seems like it's easy to find. It's either love or hate. So we tend to see it a fair amount.
The next thing you're going to tell me is you're a Broncos fan.
I'm a diehard Broncos fan.
Oh boy, we should probably end the interview right now.
And I'm proud of it. Very proud of it.
And I'm sure you'll be rooting for the Patriots on Sunday.
Oh, far from that. Far from it. My roommate's actually from New England, or from Boston, so I get to hear a fair share from him, unfortunately.
Of course. Okay, so your first year, what was that like? Did you find it overwhelming, or did you find that you were engaged in the process?
Yeah, so it's certainly a lot to take on, and we were definitely drinking from a fire hose, especially being fresh out of college when I first joined the company. But really here at CNA, they provided us with an amazing underwriting trainee program. And so the way that our training, when we first came on board, how it was set up was we had training sessions that were conducted in the field, and then we also had sessions that occurred in our downtown Chicago office at the headquarters, where we would bring in all the trainees from across the country into our Chicago office for more formalized training. And so first and foremost, when anybody says the insurance industry isn't fun, imagine getting 40 young professionals, mostly fresh out of college, in one place in Chicago, and we certainly found a way to have fun. So but really what we did was we did a lot of instruction in insurance basics, underwriting, sales, marketing skills, and technical skills. We had access to professional skills development, productivity courses, and really just a lot of training from the start. And we really had a unique opportunity also to interact with senior leadership. And so I think all those things combined, the training program that they provided, the investment that they made in us as new hires was really really set us on the right track. And it was really excellent training that was provided to me that really set me up for success. And so even from the first day, I haven't really stopped learning. Even today, at times I feel like I know absolutely nothing. But I take a look back to where I was a year ago, and only then can I see how far I've really come. And so some things can be challenging, and new challenges pop up all the time, but it's fun along the way, fun to learn new things and to discover, the potential there to grow even more.
I've been in it for 20 years and I'm still learning stuff. So there are lots of days where I feel like I don't know anything. So I think that's par for the course. So let's talk about like what you do day to day. What's a typical day like? How do you, I'm sure every day is not the same, but if you had to describe to the audience what it is that you do and how do you do it and how you structure your day, what would it look like?
Yeah. So first of all, you're definitely right in that every day is certainly different. One day I'm looking at manufacturing operation. The next day I'm looking at a technology company. And furthermore, in international, you know, we're looking at different countries every day. Sometimes there are countries that we've never seen and we have to go figure out what regulations are like in that country, you know, what it really means to operate within that country from an insurance perspective. And so that certainly keeps things fresh and interesting. You know, my day to day, you know, we're obviously working very closely with brokers to really just assess the international insurance needs of our mutual clients. And again, those are US based companies who are doing business overseas. And so I'm essentially responsible for selecting and pricing foreign risks with profit potential. So I'm evaluating businesses by reviewing the industry, the applicable exposures, and then deciding whether to accept that risk. And then at that point, if we do, I'm responsible for developing the pricing for the international insurance package. And then outside of that, you know, what I'm doing every day to day, outside of that, we're meeting with brokers, strategizing as a business unit, and most often than not, just putting my feet up and shooting the bull. So, but yeah, you certainly nailed it on the head. Every day is certainly different.
So how do you learn, right? Besides the internal training that's going on, you know, there's only so much they can teach you because you have a day job, really. So I'm sure they're pulling you out and you know, you're getting to interact with folks that have a little bit more seniority that have done your job on a day-to-day basis. But there's got to be more to it, right? I mean, you probably need, you know, lots of different type of feedback and learning experiences. So aside from what you're doing inside your work, how are you preparing yourself for, you know, the next few years? What outside sources are you using to learn?
Yeah, so I think one of the things that's most valuable, and you know, this doesn't necessarily answer your question, but really tapping into the resources that I have at my disposal, both within our organization and outside. And so so really just utilizing those as much as I can every day to learn and grow from other people, because there's a lot of people that have been in this industry for a long time and they obviously know a lot more than I do. So really just tapping into those resources as much as I can is very important. Outside of that, I think it's really important to stay on top of insurance developments, news, trends, and information. I think insurance is a really interesting and dynamic field, something, you know, that affects virtually everything that we do in life and in business. And so I think there's a lot of information to keep on top of. And so one thing that I really enjoy is just keeping on top of those trends and what's going on in the industry as a whole. But when it comes to my technical expertise, one thing that I'm currently doing is I'm currently going through the CPCU process. Right now I'm about halfway through the test. So enjoying the learning opportunity that those are presented to either learn new lines of business or just realizing exposures that I've never really thought of before. So it's been really interesting to tap into some of those CPCU courses.
For these US companies that are doing international business, what's the hardest part? Is it, well, I won't even give you the option. I'm really curious.
Yeah. So in my lengthy year and a half career, I've found, you know, working in international, one of the most challenging thing is that, you know, there's no vanilla or cookie cutter international account. Every account is going to be different based on the countries that they're going to or the type of overseas operations that they're maintaining. So really, you know, any account that comes in, really just understanding what the international exposures are, because again, every account's going to be different. So one account, you know, they might just be sending a few employees overseas one or two times a year. And that account's going to be very different than a manufacturing operation that has locations throughout the world. And so as you can imagine, you know, when you have local payroll and property and other considerations, it's going to be a lot more dynamic than a simple trip travel policy. So I think one of the most challenging things is just understanding the differences and the true international exposures that come with each account. And also just the fact that there are different countries that we see every day. So just figuring out the regulation within each country or any other considerations that need to come into the picture are probably some of the most challenging, but also, you know, it keeps things fresh and interesting, but that's a lot of what we face in international.
I noticed on your LinkedIn profile, you had actually penned a couple of blog articles. And you are a digital native, so you know you're coming into this career basically eyes glued to some kind of screen, very comfortable in a digital environment. And the blogs that you wrote were very tech-oriented. So it seems as though you have an eye on how technology is affecting insurance. Am I correct?
I'd like to believe so. The fun thing about, you know, not being in this industry very long and not having much experience and a very limited perspective is that I get to speculate as much as I want. And I'm not in these meetings where, you know, people are deciding whether or not they're going to make multi-million-dollar investments in new technologies, but I just get to sit here and speculate. So that's one of the fun things. But I do definitely like to keep an eye on what's going on, trends that I'm seeing. I think it's fascinating to really study the dynamic change that's going on within the industry.
You did one particular article on blockchain, which happens to be something that I'm incredibly interested in. And you made an astute observation. You basically said blockchain, I can't remember exactly the phrase you used, but it's going to become so ubiquitous in insurance, it's going to like melt into the background. We will completely take it for granted because it will become part of anyone that's involved in the insurance ecosystem is just going to become involved in everything. And you didn't use this word, but it's almost will be accepted just like email or the internet. How did you get into blockchain? Like, what was it a Bitcoin fascination, or how did you get to that point where you sort of understood that technology and where it was going?
Well, first of all, I think that's funny the way that you word that question, because, you know, to be honest, I wouldn't consider myself, you know, at this point in time to fully understand either the potential or exactly what blockchain brings. And so I think, you know, what brought me to writing that post was, you know, kind of just looking out at the landscape, seeing all these articles every day that are talking about blockchain. I really just sat there and I thought, you know, I don't exactly know what blockchain is. You know, I hear people talk about it all the time, and it's almost become a buzzword of sorts. And so I really, just out of curiosity, wanted to kind of dig more into it, kind of think about the potential behind it. And yeah, the point that I was trying to make is that I think that not only in insurance, but in the general business environment, I think it's really going to become a foundational piece of our economy. And so, as I mentioned earlier, you know, it's fun to be speculative. So, but this is something that I think really has some legs to it. I think that there's a lot of potential here. And within insurance, I think it really has a lot of potential to be an important enabler of micro insurance, peer-to-peer insurance, asset tracking and authentication, smart contracts as well. I think that there's a lot of potential there, as well as to improve claims processes, alleviate high premiums, and really help insurers kind of create niche coverage and ultimately to benefit the customer. So I think that there's a lot of potential there. You could take it in a lot of different directions, but I do really think that it's going to become a foundational piece of not only insurance, but the general business environment.
Yeah, I completely agree. I do. I never thought of it the way that you were thinking of it. It's still so new that mm-hmm. It feels shocking to everyone that I think you're correct, but I never connected the pieces and sort of thought of this as, well, someday no one's even really going to think about it. It's just going to be everywhere. So that was a really good connection. Are there any other technologies that as someone like you, as a digital native, that you see, given your underwriting background, that you're like, this is going to be big, or this is going to make a big difference?
Again, it's real easy to hear about some of the action that's going on around the insure tech space and what's going on with new technologies. And again, it's easy to, you know, really get hyped behind these ideas and these technologies, but it is really hard. And again, I think this is a challenge that's facing, you know, executives across the business landscape, as well as in insurance, is really figuring out what has value and what's going to provide sustainable value moving forward. So outside of blockchain, I think from a very high level, I think that there's a lot of potential in data analytics. And I think that we're going to continue to see players move, you know, really towards smart data by leveraging the big data that is available within the insurance space. And I think with such large amounts of data that are here, I think that analytics technologies will be a key enabler of smart data processes. So I think, of things like artificial intelligence, robotics process automation, cognitive intelligence, Internet of Things. I think that there's a lot of potential in those technologies to really combine forces and to provide really exponential value to players within the space. And I think, you know, really when I think about that long term, I think at the heart of all this change is I think we're going to see a shift. And again, this is being speculative and I'm speaking independently, but I think we're going to see a shift in insurance from a purely protection-based product to one that can really help to predict and mitigate and prevent, you know, the type of events that we're insuring nowadays. And I think that's all made possible through data analytics and through smart data. So I think that there's a lot of really cool stuff going on within that space. Again, it's just really just trying to weed out what's valuable and what's gonna provide value down the road.
It almost seems like with this InsurTech movement, that insurance is evolving into something completely different. The stodgy old stereotype of insurance, you know, with a bunch of old white men, to be frank,
yep.
You know, sitting around the mahogany table, making decisions. That's done. Like we're talking, like you said, drones, robotics, data and analytics. We're talking college grads that are coming out, and if they have a technology bent, there's really a home for them in insurance, right?
Yeah, and I think, you know, thinking about it in terms of, you know, where insurance has been and where it's moving towards in the future, I think insurance professionals, and again, I'm new to the industry, but I think insurance professionals have almost been conditioned to work around the technology problem rather than solve it. And I think that's different than a lot of other industries. I think we're getting better at that. But I think, you know, people talk about legacy systems and legacy technology, but I don't think we're addressing the problem. I don't think we're looking at legacy thinking. So again, I think we have become so attuned to working around these problems rather than solving these problems. And I think it's created an issue that, you know, that really needs to be solved, you know, if, you know, people are going to remain competitive within this industry as a whole.
Yeah, that's completely true. And so from a technology standpoint, this is going to be a hard question to answer because we basically laid out like in 5 years, the industry is going to be completely different. So given that we already know it's going to be completely different, how do you see your career and how do you see yourself interacting in the industry in 5 to 10 years? What do you think the underwriter's job is going to look like in 5 to 10 years?
Yeah, that's a great question. And right now it is, you know, it is really hard to tell what that's going to look like. I think we're seeing a lot of this InsurTech movement, obviously on the personal line side. Some of that is trickling into the commercial side. I think we're not going to see real drastic, you know, people love to use the term disruption. I don't think that we're going to see that for a while still because of how dynamic and how complex the product is. I think that's way down the road. But I do definitely think that the role of, you know, not only underwriters, but, you know, individuals across the distribution channel are going to evolve. And I'm not sure exactly what that looks like, but I think it's going to be really beneficial because it's going to enable and open up time for those individuals to focus more on the things that need their attention to understand those complexities within the product that, you know, that a computer can't figure out. I think it's definitely going to look different. If I'm no fortune teller, so I'm not sure exactly what it's going to look like, but we're just along for the ride. So look forward to what the future has in store.
Okay, so now I'm going to ask for your advice. So how do we reach college students? You know, you were a business major. Was it business? You were a finance major, minoring in entrepreneurship?
Correct.
Okay, so insurance really wasn't on your mind until, you know, some point when someone reached out to you. How do we do a better job? There's going to be a talent gap, but clearly the industry is a lot more exciting than that stodgy stereotype that we described. How do we reach people like you that are in, you know, going through their college years to get them excited about what it is that you do day to day?
Yeah. So, and I think it's tragic that there is that stereotype around the industry. Because as I mentioned, one thing that brought me into the industry was seeing all these different people in all these different roles and seeing the opportunities that were there. Or even you look at your show and you look at the people that you've interviewed. You've interviewed people across the distribution channel. You've interviewed people that are looking at biometrics based on selfies. You've looked at what are essentially storm chasers for the most part. So I think people don't understand the vast opportunities that are available there. And I think on top of that, I think we really need to stop apologizing for working in insurance. And so I think it's something that, you know, the industry, again, from my limited perspective, has seemed to maintain for a while, is that, you know, people aren't necessarily proud of the industry's reputation or building awareness of the opportunities that are available. And so I think that there's a lot of opportunity to improve in that area, both in education and in training that upcoming professionals could potentially receive. And so I think we definitely have a problem of attracting talent to the industry. I think that oftentimes we are blaming it on the industry and not taking accountability for it and how we advertise and how we build awareness around the industry. So I think that there's a lot of upside to really just bring about this awareness and bring about the opportunities that are available.
Is the recruiting function adequate, or do we as an industry need to think about social media, different types of social media, videos? How do we at least begin the process to connect with college students, so to speak?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I'm not sure exactly what that's looked like over the past few years. So I'm not sure how much that has changed. I think one of the tricky things from my perspective, you know, and at least it just seems this way, you know, I think you got to decide what angle you're attacking this issue from. So I think that there's a lot of times where it seems like as if people are more or less blaming just the millennial generation, as if they're just one bucket of, you know, homogeneous individuals. And I think people too often talk about the generational differences as opposed to the individualistic characteristics that, you know, attract people to the industry. So I think it's almost detrimental to look at, you know, millennials as a whole and think, you know, oh, they don't like insurance. You know, they're not going to be interested. And I don't think we're combating that as well as we could be. I don't really know what the best channels are. As I mentioned, I really think that we need to educate young professionals, because again, I don't think that they understand the difference between personal and commercial, between different lines of business, between different points in the distribution model. So I think that's one thing that really needs to increase is that education, so that they can even understand what they're looking at. But I don't know what the best channels are to go about that. I wish I did have the perfect answer, but I know a lot of that didn't necessarily answer your question, but yeah, it certainly is a tricky thing to try to figure out going forward.
Yeah. Well, it was an interesting answer because you made me think about it. I've just hired a couple of interns from a local university, and I asked one of them if they knew what a deductible was. They didn't really know the answer. And then she said, "I don't buy the auto insurance. My dad bought it for me." So there was like literally a knowledge gap. The it's not like a loan. It's not like a bank product. It's much more complicated. So they just know that it's there, but they don't really know a lot about it. So it was like when I was growing up, I was always confused what an engineer did.
Yeah.
You know, what is an engineer doing? No one would like really give me an answer. I never really understood it. And so talking to a college student about insurance, they're just like, "Well, what the hell is that?" That's actually a very good point. Like they actually don't know what the product is.
Well, and it's crazy because, and I'm going to make myself sound like a nerd here, but insurance is at the backbone of our economy and it's in everything that we do. Yet people still have absolutely no idea or any understanding of what insurance is or the impact that it has on the economy. And so I think it was Zach Finn, when he was on your show, he said, I thought it was pretty funny, he said that the industry is one that, you know, really prides itself on risk management, but we're doing a terrible job of managing the, you know, talent gap that we're about to see. So I think so I think that's really funny. And I think that also, you know, I think it was him as well that mentioned that, you know, on the aggregate, insurance is so broad and so deep Yet the problem is, you know, there is so much opportunity there, but the problem is that, you know, no one can put that together in a, you know, 30-second quick speech to someone that's walking around a career fair. So I think that's the hardest thing. And I honestly don't know how you overcome that, because again, there's so much opportunity. It's hard to narrow focus and it's hard to meet people with where they're at in terms of their interest and things. So it's very tricky, you know, when you're looking at an industry that is so broad and as deep as insurance.
Yeah, that's the challenge of the podcast, because really that's our mission, is to interview people like you. You know, you brought up Chelsea Thorpe from AIG, and I had the conversation with her about like kidnap insurance. Yep. I bet most adults don't know that that's a product. When, you know, a U.S. executive goes to a foreign country and gets kidnapped, there's actually an insurance company that's potentially negotiating and to secure the release of that person. And just across the board, between insurance for drones and cyber and, you know, natural catastrophes, it is very, very broad. I guess you opened my eyes a little bit there. It's hard to recruit someone into a career when they actually have no idea what the product is, and you're competing against companies that they use every day, like, you know, Facebook, Apple, you know, stuff like that. So that is a really big challenge.
Yeah, and it's funny, you know, and I think this is common for anyone within the industry, but, you know, insurance ruins your life in a lot of ways, because, you know, you look at those headlines across the newspaper and you know, you think about all these things that are going on, and, you know, when you're sitting from within the industry, you're thinking about all the insurance that is in place to cover those events that are going on, but most people don't see that. And I think another thing is that, you know, I have friends that are like, oh, so you work in like health insurance, right? Like, so what's happening in Washington is like affecting you? And I'm like, no, like it's what I do is different. Like, and then try to explain that, and then we get down a convoluted road. So I think it's just really hard to convey that message and make that known to individuals who are looking for jobs. And yeah, you know, to your point, it's a lot more fun to, at least from the surface level, to go work for, you know, either a company that makes a product that you can hold in your hand or something that you see, you know, on a billboard. So I think it's very tricky, but sitting here as a millennial within the industry, trying my best to be a spokesman as much as I can, you know, and I've really enjoyed my experience since I've joined, and really hope that other people can tap into that as well.
Yeah. Well, you've given me something to think about. So I think we're going to have to touch this topic again, get more, you know, box the millennial and get them on this show and have them talk about their experiences. I think it's very important to try to tackle this. So let's transition to more personal stuff, as we do on these podcasts, because I think it's important that the listeners get to know who it is that you actually are, aside from your day-to-day work. So we're going to forgive you for, you know, your affiliations with Notre Dame and the Denver Broncos. We will forgive that for now. We will punish you later, especially if the Patriots win the Super Bowl. I can't even tell you how much grief I'm going to give you on the show notes. So we'll just forgive that for now. Put that aside. I always ask, we're a bunch of book nerds, what books are influential to you, not only in your business career, but your personal life as well?
Yeah. So just thinking about some of the books that have touched me beyond some of the ones that are talked about, you know, quite often. Let's see. I think Michael Lewis's books are all really great, especially from a finance perspective. I think he has a lot of really interesting stuff. I think Simon Sinek also has a lot of really great stuff. His Start With Why book is phenomenal. One of my favorite business authors is Jim Collins, who wrote two of my favorites, Good to Great and Great by Choice. I think he really just has an amazing handle on what it takes to be successful, both as a person and as an organization. So I think he has a lot of great insight there. I really enjoy reading stories from people within business at large. And so I recently read Elon Musk's biography, and I do have to mention, because we're on an insurance podcast, there is, for anyone who's read his biography, there is, in part of the book, they mention an email that Elon sent out to the entire organization early at the founding of Tesla, and he sent out an email that was titled "Why Acronyms Suck," and it was all about how, you know, when they were first starting Tesla, you know, a lot of their procedures were new, so they were making acronyms to quickly describe those. And he essentially, you know, wrote this rant about how acronyms really just make us less productive, you know, when we're trying to be more productive, but in reality, they're just making us less productive. And I was reading that and I was like, holy cow, like this needs to be sent to every insurance professional throughout the world. I was like, we use way too many acronyms. And so, so his little tidbit there about why acronyms suck, I thought was hilarious. But outside of those books, recently I've really caught the podcast bug. So I listen to a lot of podcasts, including a great one that's hosted by Nick Lamparelli. So
awesome.
So those are some of the books and resources that I tap into.
Oh, fantastic. The Elon Musk thing is really interesting. I was in a business meeting today and we debated the meaning of TIV. What does that mean? You know, it was like, oh, it could mean this. It could mean this. It's like, darn insurance industry. Like it's
endemic. We use the same acronyms to describe different things. It's crazy.
It is. It's very crazy. So I agree with that. I will make sure I get all of those books and authors onto the show notes. So that's great. Michael Lewis, I'm a huge fan. I actually have Moneyball right behind me. one of my favorite books. And I will put this on the podcast too. There's a podcast called Econ Talk. And 2 weeks ago, he interviewed Bill James, who Moneyball was basically written about. So I will get that on there if you're interested in that kind of thing. Okay, so let's stay in the personal. I got one final question for you that I ask everyone. Now, you're a millennial, so you must have a lot of digital tools that you use to be productive. That's supposed to be, you know, sarcasm, because we talked beforehand and you mentioned that you didn't. But I do want to hear, you know, from someone with your background, you know, you're professional in insurance, millennial, so digital native. What do you do? Like, how do you stay productive? How do you schedule things? What are there any particular things that you use to kind of stay organized and productive?
Yeah, so I might get kicked out of the generation for my answer because I'm a very sorry millennial. When it, I'm pretty on top of things technologically, but in terms of my productivity, I'm fairly old school. So big on to-do lists, sticky notes, you know, those kind of things help. I'm also very old school in that a lot of times I like printing things out. So if there's, you know, long articles or anything else that I'm reading, I would much rather, you know, read a physical copy than I would online. So that's, I know there's a lot of people that couldn't even wrap their head around that, but I am very old school in that sense. So not a ton of, outside of just really doing my best to utilize calendars, and then at work, any, you know, proprietary tools that we might have. And, but yeah, just to-do lists, sticky notes, you know, whatever helps, the notes app on my iPhone, those are really some of the things that I use, but I'm by no means far and away using some crazy, crazy productivity tools, at least digital tools.
Let's test your millennial cred. Just for a second. Okay. So you print things out. I like to print things out too. It just feels better in my hand, you know, to do that. But let me ask you the critical question. Do you have a physical calendar on your desk?
I don't at my desk at work, but I do at in my apartment. I do have a physical calendar, and it's weird. I would much rather write things on the calendar and then eventually get them into my phone. But it's much easier for me to stick a month on the wall and look at the month as a whole than to keep it on my phone. So again, I know that there's some people that can't wrap their head around that, but that's, I guess that's just how I function.
You're close to my heart, because I have a physical calendar right above the monitor that I'm talking to you on. And I have the same calendar downstairs in the kitchen. So I will write something in on the calendar. I will go downstairs and write something in on the calendar for the same day, just so I'm fully in sync. And then I will enter it into my computer. So you're close to my heart, but unfortunately, I think you're going to get booted out of the millennial fan club.
That's okay. I'm just fine with that, and I'll probably get booted out of any social sphere for claiming my insurance nerdiness on this podcast.
Yeah, but you do have a Twitter account.
I do have a Twitter account.
Okay, there you go. Well, you made some of it back,
and it's very obnoxious. So
okay, so I'm very appreciative to have you on. We at Insurance Nerds, I feel like we talk a good game. But here we are, right? This is the critical moment where we're trying to reach people like you or before they become you. And here we are. We're learning something because we're not talking to people like you enough. And I think that's something we need to do more. So I'm very appreciative to have you on the show.
Yeah, and I think you've been a great mouthpiece for the industry as a whole, just in getting the news out about the opportunities that are available and how dynamic and interesting those opportunities can be. And to be honest, you know, there are times when I, you know, apologize for being in the industry in the way that, you know, if I'm at a cocktail party or, you know, out at a bar or something and people are asking, you know, what my job is. And, you know, it's much easier. It's much harder to explain, you know, the nitty gritty of what I do and how interesting it can be. It's much easier to just kind of, you know, skim past the question and say, oh, you know, I work in insurance, or even broader, just I work in financial services. And they're like, okay, I think I know what that is. I'll move on. So we do, I think as an industry as a whole, I think we all need to get better at really just promoting the opportunities that are available.
My guest this week has been Cooper Cohen, underwriter at CNA. Cooper, thanks so much.
Thanks, Nick. I really appreciate it.